The topic is, that technology selection process. You know, what do you do from getting the RFP out to getting the implementation? It's basically work, lots of work. I don't think in 20 minutes I can give you all the details of work. There are two handouts coming out. I only made 35 or more, 40 copies, and so if anybody did not get one, we can have copies made for you. But one were just the slides that I'm going to show. The other is this handout. And in here, there are two components, but there's a statement of work. And this really contains a lot of stuff to take home with you. And I would think more valuable than me talking is having this in your hand after you're gone from here. And I'll talk a little bit later on. In getting a lot of work done, I think there's two major things that you really have to think about. Is one is get the strategy right, get your tactical plan and your strategical plan lined up right. So making the right decision to do the right things and then doing all the work to get it accomplished are the two key things. And when you talk about a technology selection process from RFP to implementation, the first thing is get the idea right. Don't spend all the time with an RFP going through all the implementation on all that process if you haven't got the idea right of what you're trying to do. So first, I'm just going to talk a bit about that strategy. Telemedicine, telehealth, whatever you want to talk about is not a small topic. What you might do with it in your setting can be very different when somebody else might do with it. And the technologies you would use and the people you would use and the types of tactical plans you'd use could be terribly different from one to the other. So first, figure out what you're trying to do and make sure, one, that it ties to what your organization is trying to do. You don't want to be going down in different paths. If I have time, I might talk a little bit about our strategy, but I don't want to get tied up into that, but I'll give you an example of why we did or doing what we're doing here at the university. And you know, whether you're going to use desktop or room-based systems, whether you're going to use more classroom kind of stuff or clinical consultation, what are you going to be using the technology for? Figure that out, match it to your strategic plan, and once the idea is right, then go on. The next step is thinking about who are your customers. Thinking about your internal ones, who in your organization are you planning to use this? Is it nurses, doctors, technical staff, administrative people, educators? Who's going to use it? And spend time talking with them. Go look at other places that are using it in that mode. And the other is, when they're using it, who are they trying to communicate to? Who are your external customers? Go talk to them. Sit down. Chat about what it is you're trying to accomplish in that. So the simple stuff, when you're getting started, make sure you have that in place before and feel comfortable and good about it, that your customers, both internal and external, have a feel for what you're trying to do, kind of buy into it. Because the technology piece is the one you want to think about least. One, it's changing so fast that you constantly have to relearn it and rethink it and retest it at the time you're ready to implement it. But what you're going to use it for, who you're going to use it for, those things are much more critical to the success of your project. The RFP, writing that RFP. RFP, for those that maybe some of you aren't in it, that's a request for proposal. Some of you may not be used to that terminology, but it's really a way to write down on a piece of paper what to ask somebody to deliver to you and what it would cost to have them deliver that to you. And it can take all kinds of forms, from very sophisticated RFP. Took almost 3 months, not just on the telemedicine piece, but our whole regional network and internal systems took 4 months to develop. It was, like 200-300 pages. It gets very complex, or it can just get down to one piece of paper, one sheet of paper. So it doesn't have to be big, but it's got to say pretty specific what you want, when you want it, why you want it, and so people can respond to that. You know, if you're buying a car, you would write down, I want, five to six people, and I want it to go fast, and I like this color. You give enough specifics that you could give it to a bunch of people, and you'd get bids back saying, I got a car, and this meets the criteria, and this is what I'll sell it to you, this is how I'll maintain it. Same concept. So don't try to make more of it than you have to. Definitely don't waste forever and ever time on that piece. But it's an important little step in there. Part of that we used, that's the document we handed out, our statement of work. That was our way to go a little bit further in the RFP process. This was just a component of it that really talked about what it is we specifically wanted them to do, and also what we wanted to do. This normally comes out either in or right after an RFP. It can be done either. But what you really commit to are both sides of the fence, not just what the vendor's going to do, but what you're going to do also. And be clear that when you end up reading that and you get done, and you can use ours as an example, is that it really kind of clarifies to each party who's responsible for what, and when you get at the end of it, if it doesn't look like it makes sense to a lot of people, there might be big holes in it. Maybe you haven't been clear enough about what the vendor's going to do or what you're going to do. That may have to do with, you know, what happens when the hardware breaks? What happens when the lines don't connect? What happens when people don't know how to use the equipment? Who does the training? So support and training and maintenance. What happens at the end of the warranty of equipment? All that kind of stuff. But a statement of work really goes through that process to try to describe it. And Paula coached me in saying if she would have done anything in the past, she would actually have been more specific in there about every piece of equipment that's supposed to be delivered. If you're trying to implement, I think at that time we were trying to implement, 21 or 25 workstations out there, and all the detailed components that go in part of that weren't really outlined. They were worked out after, and it took more work at that point in time. She really would have preferred that they'd done that up front and kind of nailed it all down and made it a little clearer. And from the time that we started the work, that document really became, as I put, the Bible. It became what everybody referred back to start to clarify, as you would in a contract, you might say. Except we didn't go through lawyers and sign legal contract. We attached that as a part of the purchase order and agreement with them. The other thing is you really have to make sure you see the stuff working. So when you figure out what you want, make sure you go see it working. See not just at the vendor location, but where users are using it. And that's where I think this stuff looks good sometimes in the lab. You want to make sure it really works. So definitely be from Missouri on that. And other than that, I don't think the RFP part of it you really want to spend a whole lot more time on. Implementing it. There's always anxious to get out there and implement it really fast and get it up working. And I think you really want to go just as quickly as all the parties are ready. Okay. That's the internal staff, your vendor, and your external customers you're trying to do. If you push it out too fast and you're not ready, you're going to get some confusion. So trying to time it right so that the pieces come together in a flow. Typically, most people start out with one or two pilot implementations of it, let it flow for a while, and then kick on and go faster. We typically did that probably, I think we have 15 or so units running now, or 17 around the state, and I think we probably had two or three for a while before we really went out much longer than that. Let your staff get a sense of when you're rolling out, do one at a time, one successful one at a time. When it's in, working, whatever, go on the next. Don't have plans and make commitments you're going to roll out 15 or 20 or 30 and you're all going to roll them out in one weekend and then try to deal with it. Because it's the people side, again, is the important part. It's not that the technology's not going to work necessarily. It's getting implemented, people using it and feeling comfortable with it. Also, make sure your support is available and geared up to handle that when you're starting to roll that out. I was trying to think about why this part of it and the implementation. In the ruckus of putting it out there, sometimes you can get lost about really why you're trying to do it in the beginning, what you're trying to accomplish. Make sure you constantly go back to the strategy and the tactical plan at the beginning. Are we going the right places? Are we accomplishing what we really wanted to accomplish in there? In order to implement that, make sure that, one, you've got a local champion. Mike Rickey was our local champion, a clinician that really took that on. Very important to have that. And make sure the corporation really wants to have it so they can provide the resources. We learned a lot. We didn't do it all right. And usually when I speak, I like to talk also about what we didn't do right. We did tie it to the strategy. We did have that internal clinical and executive champions. That was really Mike and I. We did have the right technology for what we were trying to accomplish, the right kind. It wasn't room-based stuff. I think we really picked that. And we had a great staff. people like Paula and Dan Blond or whatever, a lot of people just worked really hard at doing it, but I think it took a lot of effort. One thing we didn't really have in the beginning was an operational leader, somebody that was the clerk of the works, somebody that you just turned to it and they got it all done. It took us a while, and we finally got Rick Erie in, and he really stabilized that at that point in time, turned to being the person to turn to. But it was, you've got technical, educational issues. It's a pretty vast job. It's not simple. It's not just having a techie guy or just having an education guy, someone that can really bridge the gaps. We didn't have that in the beginning, and we struggled for a while. We also really underestimated the amount of resources it was going to take, and that also, we made that up by people working very hard. But that was not the best part. I think we probably pushed our people a little bit too hard. And the other thing is, we were a little bit ahead of the curve, and we were always asking the vendors to do something that they weren't quite ready to do. And that show me, we weren't able to go any place to show me on that stuff. I think the vendors in general were doing a good job. They're doing as best they can, but we were asking too much, okay? If we were in a situation where we're deploying it now, we'd be in a much better situation to be able to show me and find it running in a lot of other locations. But that was difficult. And so the lesson I told you before about show me, we didn't do that. And we paid the price to be on the edge a little bit. It took a lot of effort. We're never fully installed. I didn't even know how many we have out there now. We're nowhere near to the number we're planning to put out. So when we're planning to put out over 700, that'll be probably within 2 years, 2.5 years from now. We're only having now, because it'll be different technology we put out, but it'll probably be, I guess it started, maybe it was 4 to 6 months between the beginning of the RFP. Can some Paula or Rick or somebody help about the time frame? From the time we put the RFP out to the time we first deployed the equipment. One at a time. You do a small bit of selling, but it's not selling. You really just need to put them in an environment where they could look at it, see it, and they're either going to latch on to it or they're not going to latch on to it. Organizationally, we only wanted the ones that were really into it to jump onto it right at the beginning, because it's still was a part of a pilot project. So each one has a perception, each physician, he or she has a perception of what this stuff's used for. And generally the idea when you first talk to clinicians, I don't really know how this is going to help my practice. I don't know anybody that hasn't used it, that hasn't come away saying, wow, I really have some ideas how I could use this now. I don't think they quite understand the economics of it yet, okay? But with the way healthcare is changing, they don't even understand normal medicine economics, much less telemedicine. And I don't expect it's going to take a couple more years for them to really understand both the incentives of why to do practice that way, and in their own practices to understand. The ones that will find a niche that really is their goal, what this can do for them, will jump right onto it. So if you're trying to go out and if you've got 100 docs and you want all 100 to get jumping onto it, I don't think that's going to happen. Too big of a change in what they have to do in their practice to really see all through all that.
So did you, just to elaborate, did you have certain workstations or did you go to certain champions and say, we'll implement your idea and invite other people?
I'll give you the story. What I did first, when I first came here, in fact, John Patterson spoke earlier. He worked for me in Boston, and we didn't quite get a chance to do this. When I got up to here, I clearly said, I need to explain what this is. So the first summer I was here, we had 3 days where we set up in a large room, 4 or 5 telemedicine workstations linked into various places across the country and could talk to each one of them. There are 2 different rooms. And we opened up the forum. We had 130 physicians come through, about 40 nurses, and about 40 staff. And that's where Mike Rickey got hooked. He was walking by, and a guy, Kevin Leslie, a pathologist who had been into it at that point in time, hooked him. He said, Michael, you got to come down and look at this stuff. And he saw it, and he immediately, in his practice, saw something. And he went up and grabbed an ultrasound machine and rolled it down from the hospital into the room and said, I don't believe it. I got to see if this could really work. So we did a carotid artery on a patient, grabbed a tech standing there, go down and did it at one end. And he was at the other end going out over ISDN, came back in, and then he could walk downstairs and see what they're doing there, come back up and look at it. He said, that's as good as I see it when I'm standing in front of the ultrasound machine. And he said, I really think, you know, I go to Malone every month to do this and whatever. I go to Potsdam. This could be really good. So that demonstration really kind of got an awareness of it for a lot of people. And after that, Michael and a few other physicians, they hook other physicians to bring them in and try various practices with it. And we've had multiple consults from a variety of different specialties, and they've all kind of learned from either Michael or somebody else, some other of their peers, learning about it. Question in the back?
My question is somewhat similar, but what kind of proposal did you have to give to the organization, the board, et cetera, to get them to buy out on this initially and get the backing that they're looking at?
I don't think June's here anymore. She asked me to try to stay on time frame. that's a big issue. It's that first item, is your tactical plan line up to your strategy. One, if your organizations don't have a strategy that could use this technology, then you probably shouldn't be using it. Okay, so you have to figure out a business plan that'll match the strategy. If it does, you sell it based on the value it has to the strategy. I got to tell you what ours is now to kind of make that sense on it. Our Fletcher Allen Medical School, all these entities were put together for one purpose. They were vicariously living through what was going on in the country with large capitation risk payments and seeing that market coming. And they said, we've got two hospitals, a bunch of docs. We are not integrated. We're not able to contract for risk contracts and be able to do that. So we need to reorganize. And at the same time, think about how the medical school plays into that. How does the educational research of our mission tie into that? And it was felt that in risk capitation, that education would be an important component of that, okay? And so knowing that you're gonna have patients that you have to, and providers you have to educate and to take care of throughout the whole region, this is a very rural area and very difficult to get there. Once you have that, you gotta deliver that somehow. I can deliver it by taking a doctor and getting in a car and drive, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours to get to place, and then they could see patients and they could do the teaching, but it's not very cost effective. So we put in a plan saying that if we could put a network out there that actually could provide education, research links, and care to every corner of our region, that would bring the care not into Fletcher Allen, into Burlington, but keep the care and education out to where these people work and live.
You were able to show that I mean, understanding you have to buy all the equipment and the financial investment, that was, in the long run, was going to be a better financial investment than
We took a financial, when you move away from fee-for-service and you look at our budget, something like $350 million, where's the dollars coming in the future? They're going to come out of fixed payments. We took the per member per month cost. We looked at where the market was going to go in terms of what that per member per month is going to be. And if we were going to get large amounts of the population, we were going to have a very aggressive product out there, low price, high quality. And in order to deliver that care, there's going to be an expense to do that. And we showed over a 9-year period to 2004 that we would save over $100 million over that 9-year period by implementing this technology. And so it was a very detailed plan. It was, 200-page proposal that went to our board and then eventually went to the state to allow them to spend our money doing that. It was not a small task. But it was very integrated into the whole plan of the Fletcher Allen system. Question at the back?
How did this affect the current network infrastructure that you may have had in place, and then did you take that into consideration?
The people network or the technology network?
Say that again.
The people network or the technology network? We really didn't have other than a thing called VT MedNet for email and some basic things. We didn't have a network that was really out there across the whole state. People would dial in through that to get their email and some basic things. That was pretty nice, but it wasn't video and wasn't multimedia and things like that. So we'd have to rebuild the whole thing. The question was, is it helpful to have a governor, a doctor? Sometimes it's very helpful.
But in this case, did it help with an understanding in terms of getting issues to the legislature, that the General Assembly, that weren't comprehensive?
These are not funds that are expended by the government. These are doctors' funds and hospital funds that are aggregated together and capital expenditure plans. So it was good to have his support politically, but what was really critical is to have the organization have a strategic plan that you could make a plan up to that met that plan, and that the board would take the presentations and understand it, and you bring consultants in to review it, and that they would buy into that plan. That was probably the most significant thing, is have our own board agree that this was the right thing to do in technology. I mean, if we don't do that, we're going to end up either not taking care of patients that are 2 and 3 hours away from us in the future, somebody else will be, and our market will become very tiny.
Can you give some examples of the $100 million saving projection?
Examples. When you take the per month piece that you have out there, that means employees, other people throughout the state are paying a certain amount per month to have their health, whether the employer is paying or they're here in the combination. At the, currently, it might be $130 per member per month in our state for a good contract with a large employer. And we looked at that. That's not going to be competitive 5 years from now. It's got to be lower. And how are you going to deliver a per member per month cost for people out there without having a way to make it more efficient and operational? So what you need in a per member per month, it's all utilization. You know, it's not as much how well you do this transaction or that transaction or this procedure, that procedure. The whole thing is how healthy and well do you make the population that you've got ownership for. So wellness and education and utilization of appropriate resources and all those things are critical. Well, getting good utilization is having the patient, the provider in the community, the specialists who might know about that particular disease, all working as a team, okay, understanding the best way to take care of that family or that ill one. And if you can do that, if you can educate or communicate, if you can have good communications between the parts of that health system, then you can find good utilization. You can develop good utilization. If you can cut the utilization down of what people are normally going to get done, you can cut the cost out. I'll give you an example. If we have, we meaning the state, if there are 30 diabetics in Newport right now, if there are, I don't even know if what's the right number, maybe there's 100 diabetics in Newport, Vermont, but if there are, how well the medical staff there understand diabetes, can manage that health, can really understand the nuances, because diabetes isn't diabetes, it's got lots of flavors. How well that can be done, okay? One is, if we could send an endocrinologist up there to work with those staff, work with those patients, instead of waiting for them to figure out that I'm so sick, I better get in a car and drive for 2.5 hours to get to Burlington to see somebody. By then, they're too sick. They're already losing their eyesight. They're maybe getting a toe cut off or something else. We're not really proactively taking care of that patient. So trying to get the utilization out of that of those people is what you're really aiming at. And we showed by having a communication system, if somebody in a doctor's office in Newport who needed to get a hold of a specialist, okay, could do something over the telemedicine, either get the help when they need it or prevent them from driving all the way when they don't really need to. That would have been a big benefit. And we took that and felt that looking at other parts of the country, that we could carve out 20 to 25% of the per member per month on wrong utilization. I'll give you one more example of kind of patient, I won't say where it was in our state, was having infertility treatments for 6 months. Doctor and the radiologist took an x-ray of that patient. They thought it was something that was strange. They thought the uterus was a little twisted, so they did a consult over the telemedicine. It took less than 5 seconds for the specialist here to know exactly what the problem was. On a terrible, this is a camera on a stick, looking at a light box, looking at the x-ray, 5 seconds, knew immediately what the problem was because that doctor sees those kinds of patients all the time. Wasn't those other doctors weren't good doctors, those are very good doctors and they understand the family situation and they understand what's going on in that community. It's not that the Fletcher Allen people are smarter, it's just they have a different niche to play in that health system. But there was 6 months of utilization of services that were all being wasted because that wasn't really what the problem was. Would that woman have gotten in the car and gone 3 hours or 2 hour drive from Newport to come down and wait in an exam room to try to go in and try to figure if it's really necessary? Most doctors aren't going to have you do that unless they know that you've got a serious problem. That's a lot to take a family member and have them get in the car and go that far when you're not sure what the problem is. So So how, if we were going to be responsible to that patient, how do we have the communication? And all we do now, and it happens all over the country, is doctors get on the phone. That family practitioner might have gotten on the phone, talked to an OBG person, and tried to talk to him what he thought might be the problem. But that conversation very quickly becomes, I guess you better send the patient. I don't know.
What kind of utilization patterns are you seeing up in the communities?
We're seeing examples, because one, we haven't got populated lives, risk capitation contracts in those areas. So we're more doing it at this point on a demonstration basis. So what we're looking for is one significant event a month per location. Okay. That means that in a hospital or a doctor's office or whatever, at least once a month, either a patient and their family either determine they need medical care when they normally wouldn't have gotten it that soon because they didn't realize it, or they determine they didn't have to come because it wasn't warranted. Those two situations we think are significant improvements. And if we just had one, we thought it would be very successful. And I would say at this point, we're seeing that. That event. If we had 700 units across the region, we'd be seeing 700 significance a month, and that would be very happy for us.